Hey, well, good morning from San Francisco. It's a beautiful day here. This is Brian Madden. Are you out there, Gabe? All right, so we've just unmuted you, so now you're there.
All right. I am out here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're fine. And we also have Jack sitting in here. How are you, Jack?
I'm great. How are you, Gabe?
I'm excellent. It's a gorgeous day here, too. Actually, it's probably about 62 degrees, so it's probably identical with San Francisco right now.
Yeah, nice. Unfortunately, for you, it'll be 162 in another 3 hours.
High today is 65, so take that.
Nice. So have we talked about Jack before?
Yeah, because, well, maybe we didn't. Did we talk about Jack was riding the sliders during VMworld for the couple of shows we did there, but maybe we didn't mention him.
Yeah, so Jack is our newest employee at TechTarget, specifically working in our desktop virtualization group. And so he's writing for BrianMadden.com and for Search Virtual Desktop and our new consumerization site we're going to launch in a few months, which we'll talk about in a bit. So Jack, welcome to the company.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Jack, of course, those of you who saw Jack at Bri4, or at, I guess, Jack, you've been at Bri4 in the past several years, we're at VMworld this year, and people saw you and thought, hey, did you lose weight, Brian? The reason for that, though, is?
I'm happy to be here as, yes, the reason would be that I am Brian's brother.
Yeah, and Jack actually worked for us for several years before TechTarget. I think, so this Bri Forum you attended this past year is what, your fifth or sixth Bri Forum?
Yeah, it was.
And when we were acquired by TechTarget, Gabe and I came on board at TechTarget. Jack went to grad school, and Emily became a mother. And so that was 3 years ago now, I guess, and we got the open rec for a new position to help us with our stuff, and that was right when you graduated from grad school, so it's perfect. So Jack is back.
Thank you.
Jack is back, baby.
So one of the funniest things is, Jack wrote his first article a couple weeks ago, and it was that one that that was on BrianMadden.com. It was about V3 and about how, hey, isn't V3 just... The gist of the article was what? Like about...
V3, it's really just... A Fusion I/O card in a Sun Micro box or a Super Micro box rather, and there are lots of other companies that you could get pretty much that exact same thing from.
And that was the gist of his article. And so what was best? But that wasn't Jack's. That wasn't really your, what do I want to say, like baptism into our world of a blogger. Like where you really hit it was seeing V3. At VMworld after having written that article.
right, that was pretty fun.
How'd that go?
All things considered, not too bad. I got a little bit of ribbing.
But you held your own, I guess, yeah?
Yeah, I did.
So that was your first article. So I know that this past week you've got an article which I think is going to run tomorrow on Search Virtual Desktop. I don't know if we've yet told Bridget about this article, so I've got to send that to her. If you're out there, Bridget, I'll be emailing our article as soon as the show's over. talk about what you did this week, Jack.
Okay, well, I took a look at Citrix's Go to Manage. This is a remote support and monitoring as a service, and it's one of the first forays into the more corporate area for that Go to Manage brand. And what this product is, it's really two parts that aren't really very integrated. Well, they're integrated in that you use the same login credentials to log into both of them. But
so classic Citrix.
it is single sign-on. You sign on once, you get access to two separate products.
Well, it is as integrated as say like ZenApp. All the different ZenApp and Zen Desktop capabilities are integrated.
right. So half of what you get is a remote support application, which is it's actually just go to assist their previous existing product wrapped within this go to manage wrapper, and so that's a great product. It works great. There's not much to say about it. The other half of it does monitoring for your environment. They say it does real-time monitoring, and it's not quite real-time. What it does, you put a small Windows crawler app on a machine somewhere in your environment, and that sends out WMI polls to all of the machines in your environment, and you can run all sort of reports and do whatever you want with it.
But it's funny, though, because they talk about it being clientless as a big...
The crawler actually just identifies the machine and reports it back to the web service for GoToManage, which then makes, from what I can tell, then makes the WMI calls to the remote machines. I think that it is clientless in that regard.
But my point is that they're playing up clientless. But what sucks about clientless is you can't have like real time monitoring and clientless. So their real time monitoring is like, oh, you want to be real time, so just set your polling interval to like every 30 seconds. But does that mean your actual crawler is like polling? I mean, you can't, I guess if you're using it for servers, maybe it's different than for desktops. I can't imagine like, you know, polling all your desktops every 30 seconds, like trying to see if a user is on YouTube or something, you know?
Right, right. So real time, you know, air quotes around that.
But it's got the typical software inventory, hardware inventory, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You can make customized graphs and charts however you want, and it can look all pretty.
So, but it's funny because I was asking them. I mean, I didn't really understand the difference between Go to Assist and Go to Manage. But you're saying Go to Manage, it actually uses Go to Assist, like it's actual Go to Assist. Like you're buying Go to Assist plus this crawler.
Right. When you open up a remote support session from the GoToManage console, the applet that pops up says GoToAssist on it. They didn't even rebrand that there.
Well, so the way this works is, and we had to find this out by asking directly, the way this works is when you sign up for GoToManage, you have the option of purchasing GoToManage alone, just the monitoring part, or you can buy it with GoToAssist. So really, It's kind of confusing how it's laid out, but it looks like GoToManage is the specific product that does the monitoring and stuff, and you can also add GoToAssist to it. But even if you do that, they still call it GoToManage.
Wait, that's weird, because the whole point is they
indeed.
So when I say what's GoToManage with, so GoToManage is GoToAssist.
All right. Right.
So their whole point was that it was one product that does both things, but when you launch the remote support, it has a different name, and you have to buy it separately.
All right. So anyway, that was interesting. But what's awesome about our job, and I think with Jack, the beauty that sort of we were talking about last night, and there may or may not have been some beers involved, but the, you know, everything that you, Jack, learned about GoToManage, you spent a couple days playing with it, you know, like putting your crap on our computers, remote controlling us and stuff.
Now get it off.
but then. You write your article, and that's it. You're done. You never have to use GoToManage again in your life.
Yeah, woo-hoo. Except for uninstalling it from our stuff.
Oh yeah, please remove the crawler from this machine in the studio.
Right. But there's no agent on your individual machines, so you don't have to worry about that anymore.
So that's cool. So I know, Jack, we've got you for limited time today because of IDF.
Yes. I have to actually run out of here as soon as possible because the keynote with Paul Ottolini is starting in 50 minutes, and I still have to pick up my registration badge. But I'm going to be at a few sessions at IDF over the next 3 days. After the keynote this morning, there's a session. I don't know exactly what it's about, but the title looks like something that I should really care about because it's called Accommodating Consumer Devices in the Enterprise, a View from Intel. So I'm going to be very interested to hear where they come at this from their angle.
All right. So yeah, that's cool. And because our whole feeling, I mean, this is kind of one of the cool things about getting Jack. So, you know, we wanted to, there's a lot that we want to do that we want to like cover. You know, we've got, there's Oracle World, there's Intel, there's Symantec, there's a lot of conferences that we don't actually see that it's not really necessarily worth for Gabe or I to go, but it'd be interesting to kind of go there and see what they have. So in a, you know, Carl Pilkington kind of way, we'll send Jack and see what you find out. So I'm curious on Intel Developer Forum. I've been there a couple times in the past, but I don't know if they've got specific stuff on desktop virtualization. I know that obviously they're talking about you know, they're for developers, so I'm assuming they want developers to write rich applications that require, you know, vPro and all that kind of stuff.
Right. And I'll have a full report of what I see by the end of the week after it's over. And if anything really interesting that comes up, I will certainly tweet about it. There are a few sessions that look related to desktops, and there are also a bunch of sessions that are completely unrelated to what we do, like about overclocking your chips, and there's some stuff about USB 3.0, which sounds like it could be exciting.
I like the session idea of overclocking your chips. It's probably like what's that, like in the Truman Show when they had like how dangerous airplanes were. I mean, it's overclocking your chips and why you're destroying America. So, all right, Jack, why don't you get out of here and go off to that, and good luck getting there fast enough and getting registered. Luckily, being younger than me, you can run faster than me, so you can get down.
And it's only a few blocks away, right?
Yeah.
Right, not too far.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll check it out and have something about that in a few days.
All right, cool. Thanks. That's Jack Madden is your Twitter handle. So if you've got anything interesting, then we'll look for it there. So.
Yep. So long.
All right. Thank you. So let's move on to kind of the stuff that we sort of had, you know, that we wanted to talk about. Let's see. So we've got. Well, I guess on the Intel front of things. You know, I did this article last week that was about the desktop transformation, and kind of this was one of those sort of more ranting style articles that, you know, where I'm kind of, I don't know if I was just in a bad mood, but I had this idea that, you know, all of this desktop virtualization stuff that we're doing, it, I don't know, like, you know, just kind of looking at VDI and desktops and data centers, it's all so complex. And I feel like at the end of the day, customers are still focused on Windows 7, deployed traditionally. And even in the comments of that article, people were talking about, yeah, but that's just not true. It's disconnected from reality. We have customers who have, you know, 20,000 desktops in VDI and 50,000 desktops in VDI. But I still just wonder, I mean, I still feel like I don't see these that often. And certainly you can talk to customers who are doing big VDI deployments, but I still feel like that's kind of few and far between. Like, even if we take all the big VDI deployments in the world, what are we talking about? Like, 2-3 million desktops under VDI versus, so we're talking like, I don't know, 0.5%. What is that?
Yeah, I mean, I ask a consultant and stuff that I encounter occasionally, you know, say, what's the largest VDI only deployment that you've worked on? And I mean, I routinely hear 1,000 or less. And so I feel like, yeah, there's probably a couple of huge reference customers that probably didn't pay a dime for their product. That Citrix and VMware and Microsoft and whoever can say, you know, can hang their hat on. But yeah, I'm not seeing the adoption. I'm seeing the same thing you are.
Yeah. Now there's a new company though called Vesk, I think it was. So I hadn't heard of them. Like this commenter, one commenter, it's a new account that created and it was called Vesk. And he had a comment that was almost as long, if not longer, than the actual article. I had not heard of Vesk before. But it looks
they got a real website and everything.
Yeah, but no names on the website though, which was like a danger sign to me. But I'm going to try to find out, I guess, who these folks are. I guess if the guy wrote 2,000 words in a comment, we can give him a phone call.
Yeah, at least he has an opinion for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone out there has heard of Vesk before, but that'll be kind of interesting. And that's kind of on this whole desktops, because they're sort of primarily a service provider. And we've got a lot of these desktops as a service providers kind of coming out of the woodwork now. There is, what's the one we met at VMworld? I don't remember. I mean, there's obviously lots of these. And I talked to another one on the phone yesterday. There's a company called Virtual Queue. And I got an email from these folks a few weeks ago. They said they're a new desktop virtualization kind of startup company. And what was interesting, when I get emails like this, I just assume that they're talking about like they're a vendor, like software hardware vendor. But these guys are, you know, a desktop as a service provider. So I feel like, I don't know, like I guess I would have taken the call either way, but it's one of those things where I'm not as interested. Like to me, I feel like it's, you know, we cover the space of desktop virtualization and application virtualization. And so if you like take an analogy to the cell phone industry, it's like, you know, we're covering like the Motorola's and Samsung's and Verizon's and AT&T's of the world. And then the desktop as a service providers are like the store, like the retail store that sells the phones. And so they're like related to our industry, but like I don't need to talk to 4,000 independent retailers about their strategy in the industry and what they think is going to be happening. So I feel like all these companies that are, I don't know, like all these companies are trying to do this. There's just so many. I don't know. I guess they're doing well. This company's got a couple thousand seats deployed currently, and they say they've got another 5,000 or 7,000 in the pipe.
And that's what's kind of helpful to know. That doesn't take a whole lot, or shouldn't take a whole lot of time to find that information out. You know, it's helpful to know that there's uptake in adoption. End of story.
What was crazy about Virtual Queue, though, is they said, so I was talking about what differentiates themselves, and they're like, you know, talking about how good their data center is, and they got like 60 gigabyte something and or gigabits, and they've got, you know, all these connections, and they're sitting right in like so fast. And I'm like, well, wait, so it's a little company? And like, of course, no, it's like they use SoftLayer as their data center. And I'm like, well, but that's not like your 60 gigabit fabric. That's SoftLayer's. I mean,
we have acquired this feature for you.
Yeah, anyone who's got a credit card that doesn't bounce can have access to that capability. So, like, I guess that's fine. But I don't get how that's like a big differentiator, because they're talking about like their reliability, but the thing about even reliability, I don't feel like. I mean, look, you know, Amazon was down, or no, not Amazon, actually. They've been down in the past, but in the past week, we had Google Docs down, and then Microsoft Live 365 and Mail and Hotmail and all that was down. Each of those were down last week. And I feel like if Microsoft or Google can't keep their services available, like, why would I believe that some company I never heard of is going to be able to keep theirs available? Like, I just don't, I'm not saying that, they don't have redundancy or anything. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if I believe. I mean, I don't know. I just don't believe it. Like, I feel like if you're putting your desktops in the cloud, that's a risk that you're going to have your service provider go down, which is fine. But I don't know if I'm going to buy off in one provider over another because they claim to have higher availability. Because I just don't believe that anyone, you know, case in point, these big companies can actually have like decent availability.
Yeah, I mean, I can have 5 nines of reliability if I, you know, spread that out over 5 years and only have an hour of downtime. You know, but that 1 hour, that entire hour block of downtime is huge.
So
what I'm saying though is that you can preach how reliable your system is, but that's great that you put that effort into it. But I don't know that that's something I would focus on maybe as much as something else. Just because if it goes down, it's going down.
Yeah, and again, like, I'm fine with that. I mean, like, I still believe that these providers can provide them with more reliability than I can internally.
Oh yeah.
But,
yeah, without a doubt.
You know, the differentiation of this kind of stuff, like, I don't think people care about that. I don't know. Maybe they do. But what's crazy, though, so the Virtual Queue people, they have this technology. So, because I was asking them, like, what's different? And they're talking about, like, their data center. I'm like, no, that's SoftLayer. That's not different. Anyone can do that. Next. And they're like, well, our availability. And I'm like, I don't think people buy on availability, because if, you know, Google and Microsoft can't keep it available, that's just not something people are buying. And that's fine. So, like, okay, what's next? And they said that they have this technology where they can run a single virtual machine across multiple physical hosts. So they have multiple VMs, and they can aggregate processing capability from multiple VMs from multiple physical hosts. And they're using fast interconnect?
Thunderbolt?
Not Thunderbolt. It's the one that's in data centers. I forget. It's the it's like a fiber, whatever. But anyway, the thing is, but hear what they're saying. They're saying that they have one VM that can run across multiple physical hosts.
They should be leading with that.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, let's say, like, that to me seems fantastic. I don't know.
So how are they doing that? This is the thing. You and I started talking about this yesterday, and we're like, wait, we have to save this for the show and just have this here. So and so I asked you, how are they doing that? And you said, save it for the show. And so let's pick up where we left off. How the hell are they doing that?
Well, they wouldn't tell me unless I signed an NDA, which I don't know. I'm not really, like, NDAs don't help me, you know.
Feel free to speculate then.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm a blogger, I'm a journalist, you know, like, what value is there for me to sign an NDA? I mean, like,
yeah,
you know, if you're not going to tell, if I can't write about it, it's actually worse, because if I sign an NDA, then I'm just, there's a risk I break it. So they wouldn't tell me, but you're right though, Gabe. It's like, I went to them and I'm like, if you guys made this, That's amazing. And
is it with Windows?
Why in the hell are you in like the bitch work world of delivering fucking desktops to people?
But is it Linux? Because I would imagine that that's possible. I mean, yeah, but
they talk about for their Windows, like they're delivering terminal server desktops to users. So I imagine that would be Windows. I mean, yeah, they're delivering, like they talk about that as part of their secret sauce and their reliability and their flexibility. But
I wonder if terminal server gives them the ability to do that. The gut check for me, and I have no idea if this is true or not, but the gut check for me would tell me that you probably would not be allowed to install Windows 7 on multiple pieces of hardware, you know, because that's how that would be construed if you're spreading
across. Right, they're not Windows 7. They're well,
it's terminal services.
This is weird too, because I feel like
even that might be odd. You know, I don't know if Windows or Microsoft has ever adopted a grid architecture.
But the thing is, like, again, but like, so if they have this technology, because they said, well, you know, they built this technology for themselves, and you know, they've got paying customers to kind of pay the bills, annuity revenue, all that crap, and this is what's keeping them moving forward. I just feel like, again, it's going back to that kiosk thing. Like, what I told them yesterday, I'm like, this is like you are in music, like a magician, and you just invented like the world's best magic trick. And instead of having your like hour long HBO special, you are still performing on a subway for nickels and a hat. And like, if you have this technology, it's so amazing. Like, why are you delivering desktops to users in Texas of all, you know, like what the hell?
So either there's lack of vision there, or maybe that solution isn't what they're saying it is, did you watch The Office when they were when Ray Romano was on there interviewing as one of the new bosses, and he goes, I have a three-step plan to get this back to, you know, profitability, and they're like, okay, what's your plan? He goes, well, I can't tell you the plan, like you haven't hired me yet. And then, you know, they say, well, can you tell us part of the plan? He goes, okay, I'll give you part of part one and part and the middle part of part three.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but they're also like, they're angel funded / bootstrapped right now, and they said they're talking to folks about funding and everything. So maybe if they get funding, they can break that off as a you know, bigger part of the business. I mean, because obviously, you know, small companies have done very ingenious things in the past.
Oh yeah, my eyebrows definitely raised. You know,
To be clear, I'm not poo pooing them for this idea. I'm poo-pooing, like, if they have this amazing idea, why are you wasting it on desktops in Texas? Not that there's anything wrong with Texas. I love you guys. I'm going there today. My sister is in Texas.
Is she in Austin?
She's in,
that's where you're going,
she's
right?
In Dallas. Yeah, I'm going to Austin today, and I'm flying there as soon as the show's over, meeting with Virtual Bridges tomorrow, and then on Thursday, I've got a show, our desktop virtualization show in Houston. And then Thursday afternoon, I'm driving to Dallas.
Okay.
So Virtual Bridges, I haven't really talked to them in a while, and that's actually kind of why I'm there. So when we were at Bri Forum, you know, which is now 2 months ago, but I guess only 2 months ago, obviously there's so many more vendors there than we can actually deal with, sort of all in that couple day shows. So I talked to as many folks as I could, but Virtual Bridges was one of them. They're like, we got to get together, we got to chat, you know, we got to catch up. And I didn't have time. I'm like, I'm going to be in Texas in like 2 months. I'll come a day early and swing on by. So that is what I'm doing tomorrow.
I saw Jim Curtin and I can't remember their CEO's name, but
Jim is CEO, isn't he? And then Leo Ryder also.
It wasn't Leo. It was somebody else that was new to me. Mm. But you will meet him, I'm sure, tomorrow. I saw them in passing in the hallway at VMworld, and so talked to them a little bit. But you'll actually get to see what they've got going on.
What's cool? I mean, the last I heard from them is, you know, their technology is powering IBM's sort of business desktop in the cloud, which makes sense because it's based on KVM and the infrastructure is Linux based, although it's still delivering Windows desktops. And you know, they've got the SPICE protocol and everything now, which is pretty cool. So I mean, it appears like they got a pretty legit offering, and then having IBM behind them is like obviously a huge thing. So it seems like they're actually doing pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, every time we talk to them, they've got a new success story or some new integration thing that they've got going on, and they're all they've been trying now. I mean, how long have we been paying attention to them? 2.5 years, maybe something like that. You know, and they keep on adding features, and they keep on looking for new partnerships to add more features to the product. And so, I mean, you got to give them credit for that. They're definitely trying to stay agile.
So let's go to the little chat room. There's a couple things that are brought up that I don't know if we can talk about now, but they're good ideas for sort of future kind of stuff. So the first thing is around you know, Microsoft licensing. And so vMaxi is talking about, you know, the there is no Windows 7 SPLA license, right? So SPLA is a service provider licensing agreement, mm-hmm. which is if you want to have desktops as a service, you can't, like, there. Basically, Microsoft doesn't let you. Aha, screw you, we're a monopoly. And but the companies who are providing desktops as a service, you can have service provider licensing, like where they charge users per month for the Microsoft license based on Windows, based on remote desktop session host. And so a lot of people are looking at taking, like, you know, server and then using that, you know, using all the registry key settings. So we actually had a session at Briar Forum about this to make server look like desktop, which I think is great. And I'm just looking at the comment here for unlimited virtual servers.
So, well, I mean, the idea here is that do you think that reskinning Windows Server to strip out and then getting rid of all the server functions and then deploying that to an individual, so the individual gets a server license,
or gets a TSCal, yeah.
Yes, but using SPLA, then you can, because there is an SPLA license for terminal services, a remote desktop.
Yeah.
So this is actually a little bit like, remember the old Harry Labana rolled his own VDI before it even existed.
Oh, so this is not. This is still one. This is one to one.
That's how
but
I.
But you're just
it.
Using. Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah,
oh,
and so and,
I like
and
that.
So the question here is, do you think that's legal within the EULA?
Oh,
and
I like
yeah.
that. I love that.
It's
so
not
you're
cheap,
using,
but it's legal.
Well, no. Hang on, TSCal, right? So you still
just have to buy the server license.
How about if you do it on data center? How about if you buy data center
for your physical
host? And then I like that. Oh, I like that a lot. So you buy data center for your physical host and then buy TSCals via SPLA and spin up a full instance. So it's still one to one. User can own his or her own environment, install stuff. Oh, I like that a lot.
There's a threshold at which that becomes cost effective.
I think we have an idea for an article.
Yeah.
Hey, incidentally, so I was talking with Justin before the show, and we wanted to look at guests for upcoming shows because I feel like these shows are cool when we have people on who aren't us. And so the guy who runs Microsoft licensing for and sort of owns the VECD program and all of this, we should have him on. And now that Microsoft owns Skype, I'm sure they'll be keen to do that. So I forget the guy's name. It's the tip of my tongue, and I'm sorry if you're listening, man. But I saw him recently. He was actually at VMworld a couple weeks ago, and I see him for the MVP summits and stuff. So let's do a Microsoft licensing day and just kind of have Q&A and chat it up about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
As a future guest. Another future guest I think would be great would be Vincent Branger.
You bet, for AV talking. Because Vincent, you know, there's another question here from vMaxi about, actually, no, it's from Travis Conley, and vMaxi responds talking about antivirus. And, you know, frankly, we don't, you know, we're both Mac guys. We only run, you know, VDI solutions in our labs and stuff to test things out. And so getting AV in there and actually evaluating which AV solution is best, that's just something we haven't done. Vincent, however, has carnal knowledge of that sort of thing. And so Vincent would be perfect to have on.
And I'm going to be in Paris in a few weeks. So actually, I'm going to be there
on a Tuesday.
So yeah. that's it. So it's I think October 18th. And so I will commit to that right now, even though I haven't asked him yet. But so let's shoot for that, October 18th to have Vincent on, and we'll have a show kind of focusing on antivirus. Let's see.
I'm actually on vacation that day. I think I may dial in anyway and join. So I'll be in Ohio, but we haven't done that yet. So had one of us be remote.
Yeah. So because
well,
I'm in Europe
in our
for
normal locations.
Yeah, I'm in Europe for 3 weeks in October. I'm speaking in London, Amsterdam, twice in Frankfurt, Paris, and I want to say something else in there. Actually, and I'm not going to Europe for VMworld, nor am I going for Synergy. I'm going, these are some Tech Target one-day shows. I'm speaking at Tech, which is a conference in Frankfurt. I'm speaking at Vincent Branger's community, like the Citrix community event that's in Paris. So that's pretty cool. So there's that. The other thing, nepotism lives. Jack's obviously not here for his knowledge, from VMaxi on the chat room. I mean, yeah, he's my brother. Absolutely. He had this job before. And so we sort of brought him back after a 3-year hiatus. But he's not a technical person like Gabe and I. But Gabe and I wanted to hire someone who's sort of more junior to kind of jump in and just learn the space, help us get videos recorded, go to these conferences. And he's a fast learner, so I feel really good about having him on board. So I stand behind that all the way. And obviously, he's my brother.
No, I mean, and I agreed to do it too. You know, it wasn't, hell, Jack actually reports to me.
So it's not nepotism at all. It's friendism.
No, not at all.
Wait.
I don't report to Brian, so there.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, you don't?
What's that?
What?
Who signs my expense reports?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, like you said, Jack had this job before. Jack has been posting since, what, 2006?
Yeah.
Something like that. So, you know.
But he's a junior guy, though. I mean, that's it. But it's great because he knows
that. We can call him that, too.
Yeah, but we can also afford to be like, you have 2 days to play with GoToManage. Just go do that. And even though it's something that Gabe and I can do 3 hours, that's 3 more hours that we can spend doing other important things like going to meetings and conference calls.
Yeah, and you know, so Jack, I mean, he'll.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
He's learning. Yeah, we get to teach him this stuff too. So he's coming around.
He learns our way. All right, so let's talk about a couple other things that we have sort of on our list of things that have happened in recently. I just got an email from the folks at ITAP. And Gabe, is this the application that you have on your iPhone for using like the remote mouse for computers?
No, mine. That's just Air Mouse is my thing, or mobile Air Mouse, and it's all it does is turn it into a trackpad, that goes over Wi-Fi to control a machine. So, I heard at VMworld about somebody who had a remote effects client for Linux.
Yeah, that's these guys here. I'll post it in the little show thing.
I guess so. Yeah.
And Mac, that is RemoteFX and Remote Desktop Gateway. And they have a Remote Desktop Gateway and RemoteFX client both for Linux and for Mac.
What's interesting is that they don't... Okay, there it is. I mean, I would have that front and center on their website. And they don't. You go to itapmobile.com or itap-mobile.com, and they don't... It's not right in your face. But I think that's a killer feature right there. It is there. I mean, it is available on the site. It looks like it's a European-based company. It looks like it's €20 for the client, but
and I haven't used their stuff. We should get. I know. I'm sure that. I don't know who does RemoteFX. Rob at Quest. Rob Malicote. Let's. I can't remember if he's a Mac user. Let's hit him up and see if he can try this out for us and share his thoughts. Actually, he'd be a good guy to have a guest.
If we have it, I mean, I have a RemoteFX VM here that I can fire up. Just for, because it's so easy to stand up a RemoteFX on a terminal server.
Oh, right. So it's still the same RemoteFX from the protocol standpoint, even though it's not using the GPU.
Yeah, it's enough to prove the point.
Yeah, yeah. Does that work? By the way, when I was talking to Virtual Q yesterday, and you tell me if I was being a dick or not, and listen to the story first before you answer. So they were talking about how, so they do everything on remote desktop, session host. So as we talked about before, for licensing and probably just density and cost and all that kind of stuff. But then they're talking about how they use RDP as their client, as a protocol, but they're using RDP with RemoteFX. So then I was thinking like, well, that's weird because I was nervous about the latency and the bandwidth, like because they're providing desktops as a service, and they're saying and they were using RemoteFX so that they could do like CAD and that kind of stuff, and provide those as applications. I'm like, wait, but you're doing RemoteFX, but with CAD, but terminal server, like because that didn't make sense to me, right? Because if you have, I mean, RemoteFX on, I mean,
yeah, but without the GPU, what are you gonna? How's that gonna help?
That's my question. Like, can you even run CAD without it? I mean, yeah, like that's. Maybe it doesn't.
I mean, it'll run just like it would run maybe otherwise. I don't know. Well, maybe not. Maybe it needs the GPU. I don't know specifically if AutoCAD needs a GPU.
Justin's
to even
saying
install,
no.
Okay.
So I'm sure you have a copy running here that you did not find on BitTorrent, right?
It's okay. It's so crippled if you don't know. Yeah, if you don't have the puck, the the complex buttony mouse.
Okay,
but, so you know, if it installs, great, and if it, you know, if they actually have users that are using it and it's okay for them, that's fine. But I don't know that if Remote Effects is going to help that at all. I don't think it's going to help it very much.
Right,
and by the time you add the network conditions into it, it might not be useful at all.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So anyway, though, so let's back to ITAP. Let's get Rob Malicote. That dude is he's a quote a minute kind of guy. He's cool, and he would be the crazy person to try out all.
Honestly,
this sort of
stuff. We just need to get Rob on the show.
Yeah. All right. So we'll add him to our list. Speaking of people to get on the show, I'm going to be in Miami. You know, the following week after Paris. And so Ed Iacobucci, who I've never met. So this is the
This is kind of like an idle kind of conversation to you, I think, too.
I mean,
Ed Iacobucci?
I don't know. He's just an IT guy. But, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not a software guy, so I can't comment. I will say, so Ed Iacobucci is one of the co-founders of Citrix, and I don't know if I want to go and say idol, but it'd be awesome to meet him for sure, because this is the guy who, with Roger Moore, no, that's not right, someone else, co-founded Citrix. But here, this link right here, so Chris Fleck from Citrix posted this link. So there was this community event in like Fort Lauderdale last week or something, and they had... Mark Templeton, it was Ed Iacobucci, it was one of the women who's like one of the 12 core at IBM who invented the PC, and she's known, I forget her name, as the mother of the motherboard. It had John Sculley from Apple and some other people. But it was interesting, but if you look in this thing, you can, so Ed talks about like coding for the 286 and just kind of how Citrix got started, because he was working. Well, you can watch the thing, but it's got conversation with him. You know, he was hired by Bill Gates originally, and he was at IBM, and the whole OS2 split, and Ed kind of popped out of that and created Citrix to create that OS2 multi-user edition, because they weren't going to build those features into the OS, and that's kind of how Citrix got started. So so I guess maybe we don't need him on the show, because you can watch the video of him kind of talking about this on that link. But
it would still be cool. But yeah, I mean. the link is pretty cool. The video is pretty neat.
Yeah. So
what is this Brian 7996 Twitter that I see on?
Don't
our
tell
list
anyone.
Things to talk about here.
It's. I wasn't gonna bring that up. I have like, just a few.
Well, then why the hell is it on the show list?
That's an emergency if we run out of things to talk about list.
Now I know what it is, too.
I have. Let's check right now. I have 7,996 followers on Twitter, and so I'm just a few people away from 8,000. Although after today's shows, I may be a few more people away from 8,000. And I don't know what happens when you get 8,000 people on Twitter, but it seems like that's a nice milestone. I don't know. So let's see what happens. And I can't. Oh, still 7,996. Yeah. I'm
done.
Trying.
Yeah.
Okay. So
good stuff, because people that listen probably follow you already. So
yeah, all four of them. So let's see here. So talk about on the best of VMworld. I think we talked about best.
We can just move on down. So we had.
I think we lost Gabe. We have a problem with we have a problem with our firewall today for some reason, why it's not allowing our UDP connections to come through. But man, I love UPC over IP, UDP all the way. But you know, Skype is very you know, we if you can connect on Skype with a UDP connection with no relays, it's great. But today it doesn't seem to be wanting to do that, despite the fact that our firewall is down. And since we're end users, the extent of our troubleshooting is, hey, IT, is our firewall down? Yep. Okay. Well, I mean, down like in the good way, like they open a hole for us to this, you know, for the show. And they say yes. And we're like, well, troubleshooting over. Anyway, go on, Gabe. Best of VMworld.
You know, I wonder, because when you cut out to me, it actually delays it. And a few seconds later, it picks up exactly where you left off. So I wonder if we're not even using UDP at this point, and we're just blasting TCP out there because it's waiting to get the voice packet back. You could very well talk to me and wait 4 seconds, and then I'll call you, I think.
Wow.
So this is weird.
Yeah.
So we got to get this firewall thing fixed. But We need like a separate internet connection in the San Francisco office just for us. Yeah. We're power users.
Well, this is a union building, so that costs about $9,000 to have them string a wire up the side of the building for our unit.
Huh. All right. Well, we'll deal with it. So I have on here the best of VMworld, and I guess you actually wrote an article about it, talking about who won and that kind of thing. But this process, I was almost not involved in it at all. We you and I talked to people, we did the judging work and stuff, but then I didn't get to go. I had a commitment that I had to go to, so I couldn't actually go cast the vote, and then I had to leave and fly home before the actual awards presentation. So did you get to see any of that? Was Nutanix the winner? Were they stoked?
Can I just put out there that, Gabe, you say you were not that involved, but if anyone's mad out there that they weren't selected as the winner, I want to point out that Gabe was very involved in this process.
Okay.
I was not there either at the awards ceremony, so I know that last year was Gabe and I, together, giving the awards. And then this year, Gabe, you had to go home, and I had a session actually. I was giving that terminal server versus VDI session, and I made it clear that would be the last time that I ever gave that session. And to be honest, with the number of F-bombs I dropped in that session, it may be the last time I give a session at Synergy.
Go ahead, back.
Yeah.
Right, VMworld.
VMworld,
so
yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
That's probably something. That's something that's not on our list of things to talk about. But so you gave your terminal server versus VDI session twice. The first time was your standard, you change it each time as trends change and things like that. But it's the one you and I have given that one before, essentially. And then we started learning about Horizon Mobile, and we started learning about what's the App Blast, and then and things like that. And you actually came to me at the end of day one and said, I think I'm going to change. I think tomorrow's presentation is going to be different than today's presentation. Did you end up changing it?
I did, and I actually ran off my own laptop, which is funny because there's all of these, like, the VMworld people, like, VMworld is so organized, and as a speaker, it is definitely the most organized conference I ever have spoken at, with how the workflow works, and you got to submit your presentations and all this kind of stuff. But the problem is, we talked about this before, like, I was always running into these roadblocks because, like, I wanted, my presentation, like, it was too big and it wouldn't fit in their upload machine and all this kind of stuff. So it was a huge rigmarole. And then I made all these changes to the presentation between day one and day two at VMworld based on the news that we heard, about App Blast and everything, as you mentioned. And then I walk up on stage, and because I'm trying to figure out how to – oh, that's what it was in the first day. Like, I had all this pain to get my presentation into their machine. And you walk up to stage, and there's, like, a freaking, VGA plug just sitting on the podium. And I'm like, I asked the guy, like, can I run this off my laptop? He's like, oh, yeah, sure. And all of that, it was crazy. And so the second time I did it, because I didn't have my kit with me, like with my remote and all that kind of stuff. So the next day I brought my own laptop with my presentation remote and my dongles and everything I needed. So I ran it off of mine. So I actually was able to make that change. And basically, because, the way that we say the VDI versus terminal server conversation, I was all about using terminal server to deliver single Windows apps and using VDI to deliver full Windows desktops. But I'm still starting to feel that, terminal server is still weird and different. And while it does have that density sort of win today over VDI, man, the fact that it's just kind of weird and different, like if you're, it's got different application compatibility, it's got different, the sharing and the, I don't know, all that kind of stuff. So I kind of feel like if you had this whole fabric that's built up that can spin up VMs on demand and can provision users to VMs and then provide also single user, single window access into an application like the VMware App Blast, I don't know if I need any terminal server in that environment. So I would say to that end, I actually feel a little bit more comfortable with sort of VMware's ultimate strategy and where they're going with everything, despite not having terminal server support.
So it's funny to watch you change. I mean, literally 24 hours later, you're giving a different presentation,
yeah,
based on the information that was out at VMworld. And it really,
I'm assuming
I missed that.
Oh yeah, sorry, you cut out there.
Oh okay, yeah, you're cutting out too. So we're just
All right. Well, anyway, but the thing is,
this is awesome radio.
But unlike a politician, I have no problem waffle or flip flopping, right? Because I get new data.
Yeah, I'm not accusing you of that.
Yeah, right. Sure. Yeah. And I'm not. I get new data and I make new decisions. So the thing is that VMware, the problem, I guess, that I have not yet seen from VMware is they talk so much about this post-PC era, and they look at, because, you know, all the Horizon Mobile is just a tech preview right now. The App Blast is not even available in beta. It's just sort of a technology showcase demonstration, all this kind of stuff. And it is, it's all for the future, you know? And kind of getting back to my, that piece I did this week about like the desktop, you know, like where's the thought leadership in the desktop space and the, you know, just all the dynamic desktop myth and all this sort of stuff. What I don't see from VMware is what their strategy is, let's say, between now and like April 8th, 2014. So I feel like when we get to this, you know, once we all get to Windows 7 and get to this post-PC era, then what VMware is talking about, the single App Blast, the Octopus stuff, the Horizon Mobile, the Horizon App Manager, all that stuff, I think is like right on. But I just don't understand.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
But it's because, yeah, I mean, you see all this stuff and you're like, wow, VMware is totally with it in 3 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, the stuff there, you can see how they talk about bridging and things like that, but it still doesn't seem like it's going to work right now.
Yeah. And so, and I just can't. But then again, like, on the other hand, though, am I going to Citrix? Like, I don't know. I mean, I still feel like Zen Desktop is a more mature product or has more capabilities and more use cases than Vue. But I'm not replacing my traditional laptops anytime soon with Zen Desktop, you know? So I guess it's not like Citrix is any better, which goes back to that whole dynamic desktop myth, which is, you know, right now, man, like, putting the Windows on my laptop is pretty damn sexy. And in the context of you define sexy by ease of money and ease of use, sex me
right,
up.
This is P-Desk. This is our April Fool's joke from 2009 or whatever, yeah. P-Desk. Yeah.
But so, so VMware's positioned really well, and we talked about this before, like Citrix, you know, this is all future stuff. So Citrix has got plenty of time to get their messaging act together around all this kind of stuff, and it'll be fine. But it's definitely, yeah, it's definitely one of those things where I think VMware, you know, they're saying the right things. What is interesting, by the way, is I think Dan Shapiro pointed this out in an email to us, Dan from Ericom. There's some video recorded of Scott Davis, who is VMware's desktop CTO, some video recorded from a Dutch user group, and they in this video they basically ask Scott about how App Blast works. And I don't know, Gabe, if you have Outlook open right now, if you can find that email, because it's got the link in there. Let me see if I can do this real quick. But
I'll try, but there's no guarantees because Outlook 2011 on Lion is just abysmal.
Really?
I hate it.
Let's see here. So
if you're listening on the Microsoft Office Mac team for some reason,
all right. Here's the explanation. So, or here's the video. Let me find my chat window. Okay. Oops. Why did that do a big thing with no link? All right. Yeah. So
did you get it?
Do that. Okay. Let's try again. Huh.
I just tried too.
When I post links in there, maybe Chatango is trying to embed the YouTube link. I don't know. Yeah, that's really weird. Maybe it's let's try it like this. Okay, so what it was, there was a hash mark at the end of it.
It's the hashtag at the end?
It's not a hashtag. It's the hash to jump to a certain point mark, in the show. Yeah. And that was confusing, this whole Chatango thing. But here you can read that, and it's at 338 seconds or whatever that means. But anyway, it's interesting because in this video, Scott Davis is basically talking about, he kind of berates. Wait, is that the word? Like, he says
berates.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Says bad things about Terminal Server because it's weird. Because they basically point out the App Blast is not using Terminal Server. And it's using, and though that App Blast can deliver this seamless window application from any machine. It doesn't have to be a VM. And so Scott talks about how this could be like from a desktop machine also. So maybe it's like you have your desktop running at your office and you're running around with your iPad and you're using App Blast to sort of transmit the application from your desktop to your, you know, your iPad or wherever you happen to be. Obviously you can see how this kind of fits into like the whole Horizon fabric. But that's kind of an interesting comment. And when I first watched this video, I thought it was weird, I guess, that they weren't using Terminal Server. But like I said, you know, if we get to the point where we can have this whole fabric that can provision VMs and make them start and shut down and move around wherever, and it's regular Windows 7, and we've got some persona in there, and I don't know, I can see that as actually like not a bad solution at all.
Yeah, and it's people get on VMware for ignoring Terminal Server, and they don't with Horizon, but by and large, the rest of the time, it's like it doesn't even exist. But here they are now with a solution that is similar to what you can get with Terminal Server. So I think, you know, they're coming around.
Yeah. Incidentally, on the best of VMworld thing, so kind of back to that and the judging, one clarification that I learned later on is we were talking about one of our winners, one of our runners-up was Teradici. And Teradici has this hardware plug-in accelerator for PC over IP. So basically, it's a PC over IP offload card. It doesn't make PC over IP any different or look any different. It just takes a processing off the host CPU and puts it onto this card. And I like this card because it's like 20 watts and it's, you know, under $2,000. And they said it's got a 64 screen limit, and I was asking them about that limit, and they said it's not a hard limit. It's just that's what they just kind of throw that out there as sort of an average, but it's actually based on the number of pixels. Because if you think about it, this thing is like a pixel processing engine, and it can process 300 million pixels per second. So now that doesn't incidentally mean that you do 300 megapixels and divide out by how many users that is, or by how many screens that is, I should say. Because
that's specifically how many pixels are changing.
That's how many pixels it's processing per second. So you can imagine right. That like a small video window that's, you know, 100 by 200 is 2,000 pixels times, you know, 30 frames a second or whatever that's going to be.
Right.
And so they're kind of saying that like, yeah, 64 screens. I mean, just general workflow, general desktop users. They're using Office. They're on the web. They're doing YouTube. It's kind of, you know, doing whatever the hell it is that users do. You're probably looking at like 64 screens. But obviously, it depends on your screen size. It depends on all that kind of stuff. And of course, you can add as many of these offload cards to a machine as you want. So, assuming you have slots in your machine. I don't know, man, the fact that they don't even have that hard limit in there, they're like, yeah, you know what, man, it's based on math. Like, we can process this many pixels and in a second, and you use that however you need to use that. That's cool.
And it's great for, math makes cost models more prevalent, so expect to see more cost models now. they actually, when I was talking to Stu from Teradici, he was saying that he's actually working on a cost model that I can feel Brian rolling his eyes, that is going to talk about the power savings by using this 20-watt offload card versus letting your processors do all of the compression and encoding. And that actually might be a very real difference. Because even if this card is maxed out at 20 watts, that's consuming far less power than all of your processors doing all of the work. Or could, I guess, be consuming less power.
Yeah, and you know,
that's what he's going to find out with this.
Yeah, and to me, like cost models, when you're actually figuring out like hardcore costs, I feel like are okay. You know, like where cost models for me get difficult is when you start looking at user productivity and all that kind of stuff. But cost models at this point is almost like comparing car A to car B based on miles per gallon. Like, take the Prius, for example. You know, the Prius costs more, but it gets better mileage. You can do that math and work out a very real, like, cost analysis between the two. And this, I feel like, is that too. So this isn't getting into, there's a VDI model with more productivity versus another model or anything like that. This is just kind of good old-fashioned, like, you know, you're going this.
Watts per pixel.
You're buying this. Yeah, exactly. Watts per pixel. I like that. Is that a real measure?
Oh, I have no idea. It sounds good, though, doesn't
it? That's awesome. Microwatts is probably going to end up being, but that's awesome. I do like, by the way, that.
Thank you for correcting me on my made-up term.
Man, we're Brutal.
Micro watts.
Well, I'm just saying, because like watts per pixel is going to be like 0.00. Okay. So what's and what's interesting on this too is so it is kind of apples to apples because it's data center power versus data center power. Because another problem I always have with the cost models that involve power consumption is I don't feel that a lot of users actually or that a lot of customers actually account for power at the desktop level. Like they're not being charged for power in the cubicle, but they are being charged for power in the data center. And so this is something where if you're talking about software encoding of PCIe that's burning up extra capacity on your CPUs versus popping in a GPU, or not the GPU, the offload card with the ASIC, then that to me seems like an actual kind of quasi-legitimate calculation versus some of the garbage we've seen before.
Yeah, I agree. We've got 5 minutes left here, so.
There's a few topics. Let's talk about next week, like the Hyper-V. There's these rumors of Microsoft, it's not rumors now about having a client hypervisor in Windows 8. So like that's a real conversation we should probably have next week.
It's my plan to write an article today about that. So I'll actually have information.
So the Quest V Workspace Desktop Optimizer? Can you? I know that Michelle emailed us.
I'll give it 30 seconds. Basically Quest is. I'm not sure if it's a collection of scripts or whatever, but it's a free app that tweaks a virtual desktop and increases allegedly its performance in a VDI scenario. And it doesn't require V Workspace. It works with Quest. It works with Citrix. It works with VMware. And it's just something that they're releasing out to the community to optimize virtual machines or virtual desktops. So you put the link in there. All right. So that is the 20-second rendition of what that is.
All right. And I guess we'll talk about some program notes then. So Gabe, you are now confirmed for going to Synergy in Barcelona.
Yeah, absolutely. So the event I guess is right on the sea. So and it's not the Mediterranean Sea, it's something else. But either way, it's right there. So
go
if nothing
America.
Else, get some water views. Yeah, go America. It is the Mediterranean, but it's a little bay off of that.
I don't even know. I couldn't find. If I can find Spain on a map, I'm happy. So let's not get greedy.
The Olympics were there in 1992. So I'm going to that. And Citrix, man, every time I talk to Citrix, they're saying, are you going to Barcelona? Are you going to Barcelona? There's going to be so much great stuff. So let's hope they're true to their word.
Let's hope it's more than like when VMware was like, oh, it's going to be awesome Vue 5 stuff at VMworld. And, of course, we didn't quite see that.
Maybe something about Persona. Oh, no, there isn't.
Maybe there's ice cream later. There's not. on some other notes, we have I've got a bunch of live events coming up. Like I said, I'm in Houston this Thursday, 2 days from now, at like some Hyatt something, I think. So I'm speaking my kind of state of the industry, desktop virtualization, all that stuff. So I'm in Houston this Thursday. You can attend that event. That's events open to end user customers only, but that's free. So that's in Houston. Next week, I'm in Toronto next Thursday on September 22nd. Again, it's a free event for end users to attend. I'll be talking, giving the same presentation there. And then, as I said, October 4th, I'm in Amsterdam. October 6th, I'm in Frankfurt. October 13th, I'm in London. October 17th, I'm back in Frankfurt. And October 18th, I am in Paris. And then October 20th, I'm in Miami. So that's my schedule for the next 5 weeks, I guess. 7 events in 5 weeks.
That's, that's crazy. We can high five, I think, on the plane when you're coming home from Europe, and I'm on my way to Barcelona.
Oh, that's right, because we'll pass each other.
So you'll be there around the time of VMworld in Copenhagen, but you're not going to VMworld, right?
That is correct. Yeah, and VMworld. I mean, VMware, I think themselves makes it pretty clear that you don't need to go to both VMworlds because it's both the same content. But Synergy, since those are off by like 6 months or whatever, then each one kind of stands on its own and has its own unique content. And
there's a lot, that's a month and a half away yet. And so, I would expect to find some good, RingCube or Citrix Personal VDisk information, things like that there that, maybe isn't available right now. They were so quick to get RingCube, rebadged and rebranded and released as a tech preview that I would imagine they're developing are doing some pretty hardcore development. So hopefully we'll see something about that in a more concrete package.
Yeah, and to the commenter who said that, who asked about RingCube on Zen Desktop, what do we think? I'll tell you what, I think I haven't tried it yet. So that's on our to-do list. Maybe that's the kind of thing we can sick Jack on and have him, you know, spend a couple days in lab and play with that and let us know what he thinks. But we'll keep you posted.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, if we knew who the PM is for that too. You know, we could have, we don't have to have people on for an entire show, but 10 minutes with the PM for Citrix personal V-disk might not be a bad idea.
Yeah. Let's add that to our list. Cool. Well, hey, on that, let's wrap. So I'm going to go hit the head to the airports and head on down to Austin. So Gabe, thanks for joining. All of you, thanks for listening.
Have a good day.